Well, and a good day to y'all. Welcome to Tell Me a Story. Nah, I'm not going to do that. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Yes, my heart is in Ireland, as my license plate says on the back of my Volvo here in Santa Barbara. And we do bring this program to you Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. Hey, the podcasts are available too, both on the homepage with the 2018 playlist from SoundCloud. It's also on iTunes, as well as on the radio show's page of richarddugan.com. And so there are lots of places there for you to listen to the program. And we also link to our guests' website as well. We hope that you will avail yourselves of their website. We'll be giving that to you shortly. We certainly hope that you will do just that, because today's program is going to be a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy this. I know I am. I have been a big science fiction fan for, well, geez, used to write science fiction of sorts. And back in grade school, I used to read some science fiction. And I still remember, folks, there was one book I read. It was a paperback. And, of course, back then, I had to use a magnifying glass to read. And I was reading a paperback that was about, I don't know, maybe an inch and a half, 2 inches thick. And so holding the book with one hand as it's cramping up and holding the magnifying glass in the other, I actually was so enthralled by this particular book that I think I read it in a week, which was unheard of for me because it's just not what I would do. It's called The Prometheus Project. It was a science fiction book regarding rockets and those kinds of things. Anyway, today's a little different in that respect, because today's program is going to deal with a science fiction book and some very interesting topics that are related to it. It is Aroya Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds. We're going to find out what worlds they are between as we talk with our guest, the author thereof. That, by the way, after finding a curious book that speaks of the 21st century in the past tense, an unsuspecting 16-year-old girl from upstate New York receives a mysterious calling. We're going to find out more about that as we talk with our guest. He's the author therein of this particular book and some other fine science fiction works as well. Sarion Michael White, thank you so much for joining us on the program today, and thank you for coming to us via Skype.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be talking about my first science fiction book. You know, I've got others in the works that are part of this series, but it's really an amazing experience to finally be able to get out there and talk about these ideas.
Well, and of course, this is, as it's listed here, this is book one of four, so obviously there's more coming. And it's not a small little book. It's about 400 some odd pages there. And people can go to, there's a website that I have listed here called sacredstoriespublishing.com, where people can find out more as well as I guess they can actually look at some excerpts. But you, as you've stated, as we already know, obviously, because you've written this book, you're an author, so you're a world traveler, mentioning that you just got back from India, a transformational leader whose work has touched the lives of people throughout the world, inspired by visions of humanity's peace potential. I like that. We're going to talk about that as well. Part of your global mission is to link people with an emerging resonance of human unity through your visionary writings and speeches. With the exception of the writings and speeches, that's kind of what we do here. We're trying to do the same thing here with this program and try to bridge the gap, maybe between two worlds of the what I like to call. Certainly, we'd love to have it the higher consciousness and the others, but the sane and the insane. But I guess that's subject to interpretation. It gets frustrating for a lot of us, Sarion, because, you know, we go through our lives and we watch what's going on and we get involved in my case, since I was 17, metaphysics and spirituality and trying to maintain some kind of equilibrium so as not to get tossed to and fro with life's challenges.
Right.
And it's like there are times when it's like, you know what, I've had enough. I want out of here. You know, I'm not going to, and I'll tell you, I'm not going to leave prematurely. I don't know what the departure date and time is on my round trip ticket. Okay. I know what the arrival date and time is. And that was when I was born. But I'm not going to push it. You know, my time will come when it's time. But, you know, the level of frustration sometimes that we feel, even those of us who claim to be spiritual people, you know, we get frustrated too. And I'm noticing that around the world these days, people who are like yourselves, I would think, are trying to do what's best for. And I like this term. I like this phrase. I heard this from a Norwegian or a gentleman from the Netherlands. He used this phrase, and it is in our founding documents here in the United States about what's best for. The common good, what's best for us all. And I'm curious as to that concept when juxtaposed with this strong need for individuality. Can you share with us, and we'll kind of start from there, share with us your perspectives on that seeming paradox?
Yeah, well, I think you're talking about a polarity in consciousness that we're seeing becoming more and more pronounced, especially here in America. I mean, we see a lot of examples of this. But I want to come back to something that you were touching on even before this, which is that sense of overwhelm and the way that we can at times feel very defeated by the circumstances of the world and, you know, what's going on, and we can feel very personally affected by this. You know, I had mentioned to you just before we started the interview, I just got back from India, and I got to, you know, travel all over the country and really take a look at the kinds of challenges and problems and experiences people are having over there. And I came back with some of that feeling of kind of feeling defeated, like, how are we ever, you know, as a humanity, going to transcend this many challenges with the way our society works and is structured. And then I came to this affirmation this morning because I was thinking about the show, and I always try to really tune into the host I'm going to be working with and the specific audience of the show, and to feel like, what do people listening to this particular interview need to hear? And you already perfectly posed the question leading into this, because it is a sense of determination that we need to find within ourselves to overcome where we feel defeated. Because a lot of times that feeling of being defeated or frustrated with the circumstances or feeling powerless, that kind of sits in our field and we don't know what to do with it. And what happens is our subconscious minds and our conscious minds to various degrees will project obstacles. We'll see obstacles at every turn, and we'll see obstacles to our own progress, to our own creative path, to our own potential. And we don't realize that the obstacles that we think that we're seeing are not external. They look external, but they are actually coming from inside of us. They are our own projections. And so sometimes what we need is to become focused on that sense of determination to change that might not even make any sense, because against all the odds, there is a potential for a success story, and it may not be clear exactly how it's going to work, but you just don't give up on it. And what I find is that the affirmation I was working with this morning was, I am determined. I am determined to heal. I am determined to succeed and make a difference in the world, no matter what. And that sense of determination, it creates an opening inside of us that allows the light of a brighter future to inform us about what we already did to succeed in the past tense. The future describing the past, the future telling us what we did and how we did it. And that's what that sense of determination connects us with. So I want to give that to people. I want people to tune into this and feel this and use this affirmation, I am determined, and apply that to whatever they want to in life. I am determined to get this job. I am determined to change this pattern inside of myself. I am determined to heal my addiction. I am determined to succeed. And just be sourced by all of the angelic energy and the higher consciousness that is showing up to help us succeed. Because it's very easy to believe sometimes that it's not there. And sometimes a little affirmation, a little bit of focus, intent, can make a big difference.
I agree with you, and I find it, again, it's very interesting how one of the things that we talk about on this program quite regularly that I am, you know, one of these days, either I will finish the book or I'll give up the book and I'll make it a talk. You know, I've been working on this book for 17, 18 years, probably by the time this interview is heard by some folks, and it's about choices. And one of the things that I find interesting in terms of what you described is that one of the reasons why we get so frustrated sometimes is because we think we don't have them. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the way it's always going to be. I was thinking about this even this morning. And by the way, I thought that was you tapping in when I was getting my my chai latte over at Starbucks this morning as I was heading into the station. But I kind of came to the realization that the reason why we get so frustrated is because we think that way.
Yeah.
And when we think that we don't have any other options or choices, however you want to use the word, we get frustrated, we get anxious, we sometimes get angry, fearful, et cetera, et cetera. And then, and I have to say, here's the best example I can use. On May 1st of 1998, a gentleman walked into my place of employment asking for me, and I'm a little concerned and curious going, so I said, may I ask who wants to know? You know, he had this manila envelope, rule size. And he figured I must have been the guy. He says, are you Richard? I said, yes, I am. He handed it to me. You've been served. They were my divorce papers. And it was May 1st. And I was able to make a joke through all the emotions. Oh, wow. A whole new meaning for the phrase Mayday. The entire month of May, I was an emotional basket case, thinking that, oh, my God, my life is over. By the way, I found out that the actual term is you're being sued. I never heard that before in reference to divorce, but that's what it is. It's a lawsuit. It was on June 1st that somehow I came out of that emotional fog. And I realized, wait a minute. I'm not the only one who is in the relationship here. I have rights too. I have things of this. You know, I have... I'm responsible, but so is she. So this is a two-way street here, and I don't have to just capitulate here. I've got other possibilities. And, of course, that's when, you know, I got my attorney, and we tried to go down the kinder and gentler road, if you will. But it was because I was in that emotional fog for that month of May that I didn't know that I had that I could do something different.
Yeah.
And again, we use that analogy of the fog. You're walking down this street. You've been told by your elders that this is the road you take to get to, whether it's school or work or grocery store. Just keep your eyes on the white line, the shoulder of the road. Follow it to this place here, and you're there. And then one day you're walking that road and the fog lifts, and you see there's a road off to the other side. And you're going, oh, wait a minute, they never said anything about this. Gee, I wonder where that goes. And all of a sudden, you have the opportunity to take a risk and go a different way. So that's kind of where we are today. And it's interesting how this isn't the first time that we as humanity have been down this path. And I'm not speaking of now what some have termed these 6,000-year or 26,000-year cycles where humanity is now going around for the fifth time because they've destroyed themselves, or the sixth time. But I'm talking about in the last 100, 200, you could even say 2,000 years, we go through this cycle every so often, don't we, as a population, a lot of us do, where we get caught in that fog, don't we?
Yeah, I talk about that a little bit in the book. That's one of the things that is discussed about the paradigm of light trying to seed itself into our reality and how it's able to sustain itself for a period of time before it gets corrupted. And so these seeds keep getting planted over and over again throughout history. And eventually, it's building towards an awakening, which we are now at. And the book very much explores that in a very new and different way. I want to come around to the character Roya herself, though, because one of the things that inspired me about writing for this character is that her entire personality and story begins with a sense of determination. You know, she's this 16-year-old girl living in a small town in upstate New York, and she has this quiet determination to find a way to make a difference in the world. And I think she's like so many of us that want to create change, that want to make an impact, that want to show up, but are not sure like what to do. And sometimes there's a feeling of disempowerment. Sometimes there's a feeling of just not knowing where your place is in the world. This is a young woman who is maybe a little bit ahead of her time by comparison to other kids and students her age, you know, other teenagers that don't share the same kinds of interests. But she's kind of searching for an answer. She's searching for meaning in a really deep way. And the story is what evolves around her discovery process of who she is and why she's here, which isn't even really fully answered in the first book. There's still some pretty big mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
But you see how that sense of determination to progress, to become more of who you truly are, is something that is a character trait that shines through in many parts of the story. And I think it speaks a lot to the kind of experience a lot of us are having, where we feel, especially living in these times, we have more potential to do more with our lives than probably any other time in human history. There's so much opportunity available to us.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much interconnectivity, mm-hmm, where our thoughts, our words, our actions can have a massive ripple effect in the world. And in order to bring forth that creative potential from inside of us, most of us are having to overcome a lot of inner obstacles. Probably the most obvious one is self-worth, because our worth, I would say, is much, much greater than what we were taught to perceive within ourselves by the generations that came before us. I don't think that any generation that has come before us has ever been able to perceive the full and complete and true worth of humanity and what we're capable of. So in order for us to become who we truly are, we have to constantly break out of the old shells. We have to constantly rise above and see our worth as being greater than what we were taught to perceive it as.
Mm.
And that's what you see the character doing in this story. And
yeah,
it was inspiring to write it. I mean, there were many, many points when I was writing this book and I was in tears, not just for Roya's story, but the other characters as well and their journeys to realize more of their potential. So it is a science fiction book for sure, but it's also a spiritual story. It's also a very psychological story. And it really tries to inspire a sense of what's possible in one's own awakening and transformation process.
You know, it's interesting that you put it that way because, and especially in these times in which we live, that at the turn of the last century, and it's funny that I now can say that because I lived in the last century. At the turn of the last century, we had hundreds of thousands of people who streamed through Ellis Island to come to this country. And the one phrase I would venture that it was either on their minds or on their lips was that I'm going to the land of opportunity. Now, there are those of us who were born and raised here in this country, the quote-unquote land of opportunity. But are we really taught that? No, we really aren't. We're taught a lot of other stuff. We're taught a lot about many, many things. And yet here you have these individuals who want, as they see it, a better life. Now, the juxtaposition from my perspective is, well, wait a minute. Why can't you make a better life where you live? What is preventing you from doing that? And now in these times, in this country, there are a lot of people, in spite of the fact that they will say that this is still the greatest nation on earth, having never lived anywhere else and experienced anything else, they feel like they're victims of the rest of the world. They feel like they can't accomplish what they want to because of, I don't know, government regulations or this or that or the other thing, or the guy down the street and whatever he's doing, or what have you. And yet I come back to that phrase, the land of opportunity. But the land of opportunity, would I be fair in saying it doesn't exist on the outside world? It exists on the inside world and will only manifest outwardly if we embrace and live in it inside ourselves. Kind of what you were talking about and what Roya goes through in the book.
Yes. There's so many different points to make around that. I would say that there are a lot of obstacles for sure. Some systemic and others, you know, cultural barriers, religious barriers, the way our education system can be an impediment in various ways or is very incomplete in others. There's a lot of obstacles that are holding back humanity's full and true creative potential. And I don't think we yet fully understand our creative potential. I think that we're on the verge of having some type of a collective revelation or awakening about what our creative potential as a humanity really is. I don't think we've really fully had that yet. Mm. I think if we had had that more collectively, we'd be pursuing it. But it's one of those things where the potential's inside of us. And the oppression that we are experiencing, both in direct ways that are, you know, the most obvious one is economic oppression, but there are also invisible forms of oppression. I talk a lot in the book about the concept of frequency control, the idea that that we're being manipulated, our minds are being manipulated in various ways, and that's a form of oppression. And that these forms of oppression are all around us. They're affecting our subconscious minds. They are putting a kind of evolutionary pressure on us. And that evolutionary pressure at some point begins to feel so unjust. It causes something to break inside of us, and we start to access our real power as creators, as masters, as energy beings, and we start to master our own frequency and to not allow anyone or anything to dictate what humanity's frequency is going to be. And so I think that we're headed towards a very big change, a very big awakening, and I like to think that this book series is designed to help guide us through that, to provide insights, to provide discernment, to help people see the invisible forms of oppression, to help people see how people becoming conscious of the invisible forms of oppression can deal with it and do something about it and not be affected by it, and to live their lives passionately and fully, being 100% committed to their truth and their personal power to fulfill their dreams, regardless of anyone's agenda to oppress that potential in humanity.
Yeah. I've never experienced this kind of oppression, but it always has struck me as, a little... And again, like I said, I've not experienced it, so I'm speaking out of my hat, as it were. I sometimes wonder when people are running from their homeland, wherever it may be, the country that they grew up in the familiar surroundings and the loving neighbors and friends that they had, and trying to run away from that. Instead of trying to change, I mean, and that's what we're always told to do, especially around election time. Go out and vote and change things, you know. And of course, then you have a lot of the other voices that you hear saying, "Well, oh, this is terrible. If so and so is elected or this thing is passed, I'm moving to another country." And of course, you hear the retort, "Well, then go. You know, if you don't love this country enough, then go." And like I said, I don't know what that feels like to be in another country where stuff's going on, whether it's civil war or, I don't know, maybe politically or governmentally we're being oppressed. They're being oppressed and saying, "Look, I don't want to live like this. I want something better. So I'm going to go to where supposedly the grass is greener." Instead of trying to make the grass greener where you are.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know how to work that out. I don't know how to answer that or address that per se, but people feel that strongly. They're willing to literally, they are willing to give up their lives to escape that kind of oppression and move to another part of the world. Do you think, from your perspective, as we fast approach our first break here, do you think that, is there a particular way of looking at that, or are every single one of these circumstances with each one of these individuals totally different, and they have to be weighed on their merits as individual cases?
Well, again, wow, there's so many different angles to take here. You know, I've traveled the world a lot, and I remember it was really interesting when I was living in Bali for a few months. I met a lot of expatriates, people from, you know, the US and Australia and Europe that had left behind their home countries to come and live abroad in, you know, places like Bali and Thailand, and you know, they weren't escaping oppression. But in their own minds, they were escaping something that they didn't identify with about the culture that they came from. And they felt that there was more freedom. More freedom in certain ways for them. I've known far less of the people that have been escaping, you know, war. Although I have met some people that left behind Iraq and other places like that. I think that I'm going to sum this up in the best possible way that I can, which is that we are approaching a time, and you could say it's because of the, you know, the population explosion, if we look at it only from that angle, but there's other factors as well. But we are approaching a time when there will be no shelter anywhere. There will be no place to go to escape the various problems that people see. Right now, people will see, well, there's this problem over here, and I'm going to go over there to escape it. Because I want to be where the clean water is, or I want to be where there's less people, or whatever. But the air pollution is growing every day, everywhere in the world. You know, the ocean levels are rising. There are impacts from climate change that are becoming more and more dramatic, that are affecting more and more people. We're going to see more and more mass migrations from the climate impacts as well as warfare. Mm-hmm. And so we are approaching a time when there will be no shelter from the massive catalysts for change happening all over the world at the same time. Like right now, all these superstorms that we're seeing in different parts of the world, China getting hit massively, you know, the Carolinas getting hit massively. You know, now there's another typhoon headed towards Japan. All of these superstorms happening at the same time, it's reflective of a larger profile of catalytic events happening, like the wildfires happening in many different parts of the U.S., that it's stimulating a lot of change, and it's ultimately going to bring people together when people are able to receive that there is a purpose and a message in the acceleration of these kinds of an events, that there is an undercurrent of spiritual unity that wants to take hold in this world and that wants to reprioritize what we make important in our lives. And I think it's going to become more and more obvious that the greed and the consumerism and the materialism is going to be shown and felt and experienced as a sickness. Hmm. And that we're going to have to change our priorities.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to continue talking with Sarianth Michael White, and also the book that that he is certainly promoting now. It's actually not a single book. It's the first of four, folks. It's the first of four. Roya Sands and The Bridge Between Worlds. We're going to talk about that as well, The Bridge Between Worlds. But when we come back, I want to continue the conversation in this area, and we'll do that as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. To help make your dreams come true, we are talking about and talking with the author of Roya Sands and The Bridge Between Worlds. And his name is Sarianth Michael White, and I want to thank you for staying with us here on the program. I wanted to expand a little further on this conversation we're having here in regards to, this whole aspect of choices. And one of the things, you brought up a lot of the challenges that we are facing and are going to face down the road here. One of them is economically. And one of the things that has perplexed me beyond anything I can really comprehend, and that is economists. Now, one of the great lines, I believe it was of Will Rogers, who said, "You could lay 100 economists end to end, and they will all still point in different directions," which I thought that was a pretty good line, but. One of the things I find fascinating about economists is that regardless of what the numbers are, they aren't happy. It's not good enough, right? If the numbers are bad, all right, and whatever that means, they're not happy. And so, we need to have the numbers up. And when the numbers are up, they're not up enough. And so I sit there going, what numbers would make you happy? Which seems a silly thing to say to an economist who doesn't care about happiness unless the numbers are where they want them. But the thing that I'm curious about, and this goes to our conversation regarding choices as well, why is it that that we seem to think this is the only viable form of economy? Because maybe we've come up with, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 different economic models, and we're choosing one. And yet there are more than 7. There are as many economic models as there are people on the planet. And right now there are 7.6 billion. And most of them aren't, economists. But you know what? They're living their lives and they're doing their thing, right? So from that standpoint, whether you're talking about the economy, whether you're talking about the educational institutions or system, whether you're talking about the religious and or spiritual and or metaphysical, if you want to put it into that context, paradigms, it's like we get so vested or invested in one particular way of doing things, and I guess it's because we don't like change.
Yeah, well, you know, the main goal in our society has been to amass material wealth, to manifest material achievements, to make money. You know, making money is the goal. And, you know, like you said, there's this element of consciousness that is about individualism, you know, and that is sometimes the very polar opposite of this more altruistic way of being that, you know, sees us all as one family and one whole. And, you know, what I do to you, I'm doing to myself. And then there's this individualistic, mantra of consciousness of, you know, I and me and, you know, how can I succeed and have more and have greater power, control, influence.
The two-year-old is, it's mine, 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 mine.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about a different kind of economy because we have an economy that is primarily, well, let's say it was primarily based upon goods and services that were more physical in nature. Mm-hmm. Now, there has been a transition or a shift over, you know, I'm not going to try to give any particular date range, but let's just say over, you know, a certain period of time, we've gradually seen a lot more people with careers that are not involving producing physical commodities or doing physical work. They're doing, for example, psychological work. You know, tons of people, and myself included, you know, my job is to help people. I help people with insight. I help people with instruction, with advice, with intuitive awareness. And that's how I pay the bills. And there's a lot more people in the world doing that. Now, that is an economy, even though we're still working with the monetary system, that represents the emergence of a knowledge-based economy, an economy of like if I look at the courses that I teach and that people buy from my website, that is part of it's a knowledge product. And there are a lot more people that are making their way in the world through creating knowledge products. Well, let's just consider that may be a reflection of an emerging new world paradigm that eventually, and I don't know how far out this is, you know, it could be, you know, 20 years, it could be 100, it could be 200 years. At some point, I think we are going to get beyond the limitations of money, and we're going to change our priorities and change our pursuits. And we're going to realize that the greatest path of acceleration for humanity and the greatest fulfillment of our humanity is through us sharing our consciousness with each other, sharing our frequencies, sharing our knowledge, sharing insight, awareness, and we eventually can evolve to become a culture that is more spiritual in nature, that cares less about amassing physical things or trading in physical things, but is more invested in trading knowledge. Trading, for example, you know, like when I do trade with a friend who is also gifted in certain ways, and they share their gifts with me, and then I share my gifts with them. We are exchanging energy and consciousness and sharing codes of consciousness that are impacting each other's evolution, and we are accelerating each other's evolution from that kind of interaction. We are changing our resonances as beings through sharing the resonance of our strengths and adopting each other's strengths. And that's where human evolution is going, and that's where the economy is going. So eventually we won't even need a monetary system in order to support or create a foundation for that, because resources will be commonwealth. We will see ourselves as stewards of the resources that we have, and we will act as stewards in conscious ways to share the resources that we have in ways that are guided. People that have access to a great deal of resources will be in a stewardship role, and they will be attuned to what the world and the earth and humanity is asking of them for how to appropriate those resources. But that's probably a long ways away from where we are. Well, we still have many, many stages of consciousness to get through collectively before we can go there.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure if you're familiar with a gentleman by the name of Jacques Fresco. He is the founder of the Venus Project out of Florida. And one of his pillars of his new civilization, and by the way, he was also an architect as well as a futuristic visionary. One of the pillars was that the new economy would be a resource-based economy, and the resources would belong to all the people. You'd still need distribution, but the distributors would not control the way they do today the resources. I remember saying to him, I asked him when he was 94. I interviewed him again at 99, and then he passed on not too long after. I said, Jacques, do you think, because I was excited. I said, let's make it happen now. I said, do you think this will happen in your lifetime or mine? And he said, in our lifetimes. And he says, well, it's not going to happen in mine, his, as he was 94 at the time. And it's probably not going to happen in yours. And I was rather disheartened. And I said, well, why? Why isn't it going to happen? He says, for the very reason that you said, that the consciousness of the people isn't to a sufficient level to accept and embrace that kind of a concept. Would I be amiss in saying that the constructs, I'll call them, of liberty, freedom and liberty, and I'll even put privacy into that category, that these are irrelevant to that higher consciousness? Because we won't care. It won't matter, because we're going to be living on, if you will, a different, not necessarily physical plane, but we're going to be living on a different plane of sorts, where I'm not going to be infringing on your personal freedoms and liberties, because I'm not going to care. It's like, I want what's best for Sirion, and Sirion wants what's best for me. One of the phrases that I use quite often with people when I'm talking about success, and I want to do a project for someone, kind of like what you were talking about before. I want you to be successful, because if you're successful, then I'm successful. Now, granted, I'm steering away from self, but there is a little bit of a self-interest there. I want to be successful, but I can't be successful unless you are too. And yet our current paradigm, economic paradigm, since we're talking economics, that's not what it's about. And whenever I hear an advertiser or a politician bashing their competition, or trying through the courts to undermine their competition, I write them off. I say, I will not buy any of your product. I will not use your service. Because if you can't stand on your own and say, my product or service is really good because we put our love and our heart and our energy into what we do, give us a shot. If you have to put down the other guy, that's the kind of energy I think that kind of what we're talking about, we want to stay away from, right?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the concept of a resource-based economy, because I think there is a real potential for that. I have had some visions and flashes of the future where that also is part of the foundation of how we begin to relate to resources differently. And I think that one of the shifts that has to occur is that we see the Earth's resources as commodities. And, you know, individuals, companies see these things not as something sacred, not as something that is commonwealth. But, you know, if I can go buy a piece of land and extract the resources from that and sell that for my own personal interests, you know, that's viewing the Earth's resources as commodities. What needs to change in our consciousness is that we see all of the Earth's resources, biological, mineral, water, everything, not as something that, you know, if I have enough money to own it, then I get to determine its use for my own interests. We need to sanctify all of it. The whole earth needs to be sanctified. We have to sanctify life. We have to sanctify all of the material resources that are there and see them as something sacred and something precious. And there's a real reason why we need to learn how to do that. That is, it's kind of cosmic in nature. I don't even know if we have time to get into this all the way.
No, go for it. Go for it.
Okay, well, one of the subjects in the book, Roya Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds, it does get a little bit into the subject of the extraterrestrial presence. So, and that is going to be a topic throughout the series. It's one of the things that's explored. And one of the ideas that I think that we need to really start to grasp is that we attract a reflection of our resonance. Mm-hmm. Whatever we are holding as a resonance in our bodies and consciousness, we attract a reflection of that to show us a mirror of ourselves. It's a law of attraction. And the same is true when we extrapolate that principle out to a galactic scale. So we are attracting from a galactic spectrum of consciousness a reflection of our own resonance. So if we treat the Earth's resources only as commodities to profit from, then we will attract from the galactic spectrum beings and extraterrestrial nations that also view the Earth's resources as commodities and not something that is sacred and not something that belongs to the whole of humanity. But if we do sanctify the Earth and see all the Earth's resources as commonwealth and assume a stewardship role that factors into our stewardship roles and inclusiveness that includes how every decision we make impacts the whole, then we are able to protect the Earth from those very same kinds of entities in the galaxy that would want to gain access to our resources and become trading partners and mislead us down various vectors of history that we can't yet discern are potentially being worked out on our behalf. So that's something that is also explored in the book.
Yeah. I mean, and there are so many different perspectives, but one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned it, and that is this aspect of seeing visions of the future. First of all, how long has this been going on?
Well, I have noted that I have dreamed about things before they happened throughout my entire childhood. But it wasn't until I was 17 that things started to open up in a bigger way. And I started experiencing very profound inner experiences. And when I was 18, I had an experience that revealed to me a pretty large segment of my life purpose. It's like I leaped ahead into my own body in the future. I saw different things that I was doing in the world. I saw books that I was going to write. And from that point, my training with spirit just kind of took off. And I was having not just visions of the future, but visions of the ancient past. I was being shown things like the life of the Master Jesus and things that he taught and did. I was seeing things from the life of the Prophet Muhammad, from the life of the Buddha, from the life of all these great masters from the past. And that's a whole other interview probably, but there's a kind of a behind-the-scenes body of work that goes back almost, you know, it's 20 years in development now, that is informing this series of fiction books that I'm writing, which are, I think, according to many of the readers and the reviews, if you read them on Amazon, a lot of people will say, this seems like it is largely not fiction. And that is true. The characters are fictional. And yet they're also archetypes. They're real in the sense that they're a part of our own potential come to life through these characters. But everything that they experience, everything they see, everything that they see as visions themselves comes right out of the things that I've been shown and have been given to pass on as information to others.
You know, one of the things that has struck me, and I want to continue on this journey as far as sort of seeing visions of the future. You know, I took a course in college, in junior college back in Phoenix, and it was a futurist course. And I still remember the instructor. We used to call him Honorary Connery. His last name was Connor. And we used to just call him Honorary Connery because he would get a little feisty sometimes because he believed in the future. Well, I did too in the 60s when I was watching the Jetsons and thinking, oh, great, in the 21st century we're going to have flying cars. Yeah, we're not there, and I'm a little disappointed, but what are you going to do? But you have a lot of people who are wanting to sort of see the future, whether they're talking about economics, whether they're talking about whatever they're talking about, whether it's short-term or long-term. And of course, we also have people in our society, they're the mediums or they're intuitives, they're psychics and so forth, who, and I say this just for the sake of argument, who claim to be able to tap into that energy and kind of see where you're going to be tomorrow or next week, next month, next year kind of thing. At the same time, acknowledging, hey, everything's in flux and that's today. Tomorrow could be a different story. What are your thoughts about people focusing more on, because a lot of people, there's nothing they can do about the past. You can't change the past. And here we are in the present, don't like it, can't do anything about it, so I'm going to think about the future. I'm just going to think about what it's going to be like. And so forth. That's a bit of a trap, isn't it?
Yeah, and I have to say that my own capacity to go there in a visionary way, which I've lived with an ability to experience that and go there quite consciously at times, that has led to some escapism within myself that I've had to overcome. So I've had to learn how to become grounded in the present and to realize that no matter what I see in the future, there's no guarantee of anything, that I'm only ever seeing probabilities of something that's possible. The future isn't concrete. There's many different ways that things can go. Mm. But yeah, I think that there's a lot of escapism in various ways. I think there's a lot of ways that we distract ourselves. But I also think that the future, and I'm speaking specifically of the future of the highest calling of the divine plan, if you will, mm-hmm. that future, the highest calling, the highest potential for humanity is folding over to touch us in the past. It is having a causal effect. There's an effect of reverse causation where the brightest future is causing our present to shift into alignment with that trajectory. And that's actually, I've experienced that's how the universe is designed, that the future creates the past leading up to it. reality or history is created from the future into the past and then remembered forwards.
Sort of a loop of sorts.
It is very much a loop.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that there aren't forces trying to still negotiate the outcome for their own interests or to influence or manipulate the outcome for its own interests, because this is a free will zone.
Yeah.
There's free will, and like you said, you know, we have gone through cycles where we've made these same mistakes before. And it's also interestingly, you've kind of picked up on something that's also explored in the book, which is the idea that we perhaps have lived through a version of what we're going through now before on another timeline, where things went horribly wrong. And now we are faced with the same potential of it going horribly wrong again, but we're maybe wiser on this timeline, and we can start to make choices that we didn't know how to make before.
Yeah. Well, I want to jump back to something, because I just found a reference that I wanted to share with you, and I'd like to get your input on this.
Yeah.
We were talking about economics earlier, and a passage from the Bible, from the Christian Bible, just has been screaming in my head. And as many of our listeners know, the universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride. So when the universe puts a thought into my head, and if I don't address it, it won't let go. So this particular passage, this is from the New Testament. And from my perspective, the Old Testament spoke of the future, at least from the theological context. And so the New Testament basically puts everything in place, finalizes, crosses all the T's and dots all the I's of the old contract, old covenant. Okay, done with that. Thank you very much. Now we have this new thing. And I came across this, and it like I said, it was in my head, and I couldn't remember exactly where it was, but it's basically in one of the Gospels of the New Testament, chapter 6, 26 to 34. Now, this is not a religious program per se. I'd like to consider it more metaphysical and spiritual, but this is what the passage says. Look at the birds of the air, for they neither sow nor reap nor gather in into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Which of you, by worrying, can add one, cubit to his status? I'm going to skip down to one of the passages further down here. And basically, he says, therefore, do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear, etc., 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 for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things. But seek first the kingdom of God and all his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you, or added to you. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. The thought that screamed out at me was, where in any of that verbiage is there the concept of capitalism or free enterprise? I don't see it. What I see is what you talked about earlier in the last segment, about our raising our consciousness to a level that we're still going to do the things that we are led to do, to create the foods in the stores or what have you, and produce the clothing and build the structures to live in. But it's going to come from a whole different motivation. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that is a very, very good point. Well put. And I always come back to this vision, this awareness of what I believe is possible, where, gosh, again, so many different angles. I'll tell you what, there's a vision I want to share.
Please.
And since we're talking about visions of the future, there's a vision that I was given quite some time ago. I want to say this is a good 7-8 years ago. And I was taken, I want to say, thousands of years into the future of humanity. And I saw what humanity could become when we reach the point of transcending our physicality and being just beings of pure energy. And I saw that clearly, like I had leaped into the energy body of a part of myself that was there, like maybe a future incarnation or something. And we were all energy beings, and we could change forms. We could be a ball of energy, or we could manifest a human-like form, even though we didn't look quite the same way that we do now. And we could fly and teleport, and the entire earth had been changed, and it was filled with living energy. And we could walk upon the earth, and we could just breathe in the prana and the energy from the plants, from the consciousness of the land. And it was like, just like a hummingbird, you know, sipping nectar from a flower. We were sipping the essences, almost like drinking in the smells, the unique spin of and vibration of the molecules from all of the different forms, the living forms that we could see around us. We were sipping in the colors and sipping in the essences and just being in bliss and gratitude and a state of constant wonder of this beautiful garden of an earth. There were hardly any buildings at all. There were only certain places upon the earth that were like, I would call them sort of like media centers or libraries. And they weren't libraries anymore where there were books. People were accessing the memories of history through these centers of light, and they could just read the records and look at anything they wanted to see in history. They could watch events going on in this time period. And they were, some of them, watching events that were happening in this time period. And seeing the echoes of that future that they were in, their present, starting to appear within our century now, and the shift in consciousness that is now well underway. And so I see that, if you want to call it the heavenly kingdom or the kingdom of heaven made manifest upon the earth, I saw that as being the great spiritual inheritance that we're all working toward. The evolution of consciousness, this great struggle of all of our ancestors, is headed towards a victory, a breakthrough where we finally realize our potential as a whole, as a singularity, and we move beyond materialism. We move beyond the idea that any of us are in this alone. And we start to embrace a new kind of human experience where we feel each other from within. And we allow that collective vibration of group consciousness and group intelligence and group empathy to begin to evolve the capacity of our brains so that we can process more and more of that type of collective sensory awareness. And I actually believe that our brains were designed for that, that we are on the verge of the next level of brain evolution, which is also what the story Roya Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds is about, and the whole series. It's ultimately about the next level of human brain evolution and the evolution of consciousness and what it's going to take to get there.
I can't help but mention this. We've had Greg Braden on this program many times, and he wrote a book called The Healing Power of Belief. And one of the things we discussed was the concept of the difference between believing and knowing. And he says that there will come a day when we will raise our consciousness. And I think you're saying this, where we will no longer believe, we will know. We will just know. There will be no more belief. It's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, imagine, I want to try to, bring this down to earth and create some context for this concept of the next level of human brain evolution.
Please.
So, when you go to Google, you want to learn something. And you type in some search keywords, pulls up a list of websites. Maybe there's some articles, maybe there's some videos, and you're able to go and learn something that you didn't know before and get your questions answered. And it's amazing that we have that tool to be able to do that.
Yeah.
That is, in a way, a reflection of where human brain evolution and the evolution of consciousness is about to go. It already is to a certain degree. It's just not very widely experienced. I've had tastes of this as a channel, as somebody who practices channeling ascended masters and angels and higher beings. I experience shared consciousness. I experience getting imprinted with the knowledge of other beings that then becomes a part of me and informs my experience. But what we're talking about here is, imagine if instead of typing in search keywords into Google, you are able to ask a question to the collective consciousness of humanity, or to call forth certain aspects of the collective consciousness and to query it for information. And suddenly your brain becomes filled with different perspectives. And light packets of information are arriving and exploding in your consciousness and teaching you things. And you're able to just learn at an accelerated rate by being in this dialogue with the collective. That is where it's headed. And the great warning that the book contains is that we don't ultimately need technology, or we will not be dependent upon technology to get there. The technology that we have today is a stepping stone. It's helping us become networked together enough so that the acceleration of light in human consciousness can take us beyond the current technological platform. Doesn't mean we're going to be abandoning it anytime soon. But The great warning is that we don't need technology to make that leap. It's a leap in consciousness. However, there are certain forces that would want us to believe that the only way for us to get to that next level is to become even more dependent upon technology.
Yeah, yeah. I think that one of the great examples in our history of that transition, and it's a very, very profound one, and that was the Gutenberg Bible. When the Bible was finally printed and distributed to the masses, the church no longer had a hold on the information. And so now the people could research for themselves. And the thing I love about what you're saying is that we don't have to worry about and concern ourselves with the possibility of us as individuals being chipped or some device put into our brains to be able to access this information from a technological standpoint, because right now we have that. And I would say that that is what we call our intuition, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear people, I'm watching, these are people that I call technology pushers that are saying that, like, augmented reality and virtual reality is the future. and I really have to laugh at the naivety of people like that, which I understand their experience of it. It's probably for them, it's a revolutionary tool. Somebody who sits in quiet meditation and experiences profound transmissions of love and light and bliss and knowledge coming from higher beings, from somebody who has been able to learn how to travel out of body and to look into the records of the past and to read the resonance that is in the stones of the great monuments and to communicate with invisible beings. It's like that, to me, is the future. Not this new technological paradigm that is trying to be promoted right now. Yeah. The future is energy. It's pure energy. It'll take us beyond technology.
Yeah.
But there's a real danger that we could go down a very different path and become trapped in a technological paradigm that erases, literally erases, the sensitivity needed to maintain awareness.
Yeah.
These other multidimensional levels of who we are.
Well, you know, quite honestly, we could just, and I would love to. I wish I had the time right now. I wish I was doing this show 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. You'd be the guest for the all 3 hours, because we could talk about the secrets, as you talk about in the book, Roya Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds, as well as the prophecies. I mean, this is a wonderful context, a concept, the age of disclosure, which we've sort of touched upon, and of course the splitting between worlds, measuring messages, of course, from beyond time. These are just topics that you know we could delve into and then some, because we've literally only scratched the surface. And I don't know if this is already in the works. I don't know if this is prophetic in any way, shape, or form, but it sounds an awful lot like, because I can see in my mind's eye this thing unfolding as a movie or what have you, some type of visual treatment. I saw it when I was reading Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code, and I was actually seeing the images in my mind, and this was long before the movie was ever in the works. And when the movie came out, every single character, including the character that Tom Hanks played, looked exactly like my internal movie. And I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away. So I'm really excited about this, and would love to continue this conversation. And Sarion, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. This has just been an extraordinary broadcast, and I want to have you back sooner than the end of the year. I'd love to have you back again sooner so that we can talk more about the work that you're doing, some of the various aspects of your life that you are incorporating both into your books, especially this four-part series, which we've got three to go. And granted, this may be for young readers, but hey, I think this is for everybody because of the messages that are contained within the pages and within the words. And I want to just thank you so much for sharing these concepts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, how can people get in touch with you? And is that website that I put out, sacredstoriespublishing.com, is that a good place for them to start?
Well, actually, that's Sacred Stories is a great place. They also have, you know, a lot of other wonderful books there and programs, classes that they teach. There's Sacred University and lots of amazing other teachers that people can connect with through that website. However, there's also the royasands.com website for the book, and that's where I'm going to be posting more videos about the book itself and the story, and extrapolating information, unpacking information from the story, and going deeper into the insights, the prophecies, and posting other interviews there as well. So royasands.com, and that's also where you can stay up to date on everything that is coming out.
Yeah, I'm actually looking, and I'm looking at this this massive list of different places that you can go to get different things in reference to the book as well. Amazon, of course, is prominent right there, as well as some other places, Barnes & Noble, Nook, and so forth and so on, iBooks. I'm curious as to whether this is going to be put into Audible format.
You know, I think that is going to happen at some point. My schedule is so full with starting the promotions for this that I haven't even tried to look at putting that on the schedule yet. But I think that will happen at some point.
And Sarion, I can't thank you enough for giving us so much time here on the program. And should you ever find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, you know, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, because again, you know, we could just go on for hours about all of these different things and hopefully enlightening people and helping to facilitate that process of raising the consciousness collectively for all of us. Because I got to tell you, my dad may be 87 and he's lived to almost twice as long as I have. I can hear the frustration in his voice. I'm only 58 and I'm frustrated, but I want to get out of that frustration and shift my perspective. And you've helped, you have helped me to do that here in my therapy session, as it were. But again, I thank you so much and we encourage people to go to that website, which is, of course, royasands.com to get more information, find out more about you as well. And obviously all the other information that you have available. And before we let you go, I want to ask you three final questions. And those questions are, firstly, who is Sarion Michael White?
Sarion Michael White is somebody who is absolutely committed to showing up at 100% and fulfilling my purpose to serve humanity and to make a difference in the world. And to really be a source of love and inspiration in people's lives.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to provide discernment that I think is very uncommon in the world and also very needed. I have been given a gift of discernment that has continued to evolve to, I would say, a level of discernment that's really beyond where a lot of people at that are making decisions on our behalf on a very large scale, you know, in terms of like our leaders. And so I want to pass on that discernment both to our leaders and to the average person, because every choice matters. Every choice counts. Every person counts. And then unity, peace. I want to support people to transition and the world to transition into the promised age of peace, which I believe that we will see in our lifetimes.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to be a voice, to be a mouthpiece and a spokesperson for causes of change, for revelation, for the evolution of consciousness, and to fearlessly lead by example and to demonstrate surrender and a path that empowers the best in humanity.
Roya Sands and the Bridge Between Worlds is the book. It's book one of four, and that's just the starting place. And we encourage you to get a copy and go to royasands.com. We will be linked to that website as well. And Sarion, thank you so much. This has been fantastic, and I really hope that we can connect again and put together another program. Maybe next month we can do that. And I know you're busy, and I know you got lots going on, but I want to help to continue to not only get the word out about what you're doing, but also talk more about what you're doing and how you are facilitating the transformation. Someone said the other day to me, when I used the phrase or the word change, they said, "Oh, we don't want to change because the chances are it'll change back. We want to transform it." And yeah. I guess they don't think that transforming can't be transformed back, but I guess semantics, what have you. But I liked the word better than the word change, because it really... it does sound more permanent, you know, kind of thing, you know, and it's an ongoing process.
Well, you may even see me in the studio, because I am moving to Southern California probably within the next month.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Well, Hey, please look us up. I'll give you my number and have you give me a call when you get up to this area, and we'll figure out how to connect. And whether it's in studio, I have a portable digital recorder, so I could come to you and we could do something in that respect too. We've done that before as well. But again, thank you so much, and I do look forward to meeting you in person.
Yeah, thank you. I do too.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We have been giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.